Welcome to Starfleet Universe On Call. I am Paul Franz, owner of Franz Games. I run SFB Online, FedCom Online, and Starfleet Warlord. Just a reminder how to join us. We have Talkcast every Thursday night starting at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time. You can either call on the phone, just dial 605-562-0444. Just follow the directions. The call ID is 17702. Or you can participate on the web. Just go to the TalkShoe website at www.talkshoe.com. Search for call ID 17702 or Starfleet Universe on call or SFU on call. Or if you want the best online experience, yes, you want to go to twitch.tv. Yes, I said twitch.tv/SFU on call. Go there and you will find us. You'll be able to join the chat room and watch the beautiful stream of this podcast happening live. And if you need to contact me for any reason, my email address is sfuoncall@gmail.com. That's sfuoncall at gmail.com. Also, if you want to follow me on Twitter, my account there is sfuoncall. If you want to follow my personal account, because that is my podcasting account, my account is Paul Franz, PaulFranz. There's no T in that. And also, if you want to follow my business account, where you can find out about the latest happenings in Starfleet, SFB Online, and FedCom Online, and Starfleet Warlord. This follow Franz Games. It's FranzGames. And again, there's no T in that. And of course, the lovely Talkcast gets into podcasts available on iTunes and various other feeds around the net. Some quick news from ADB this week. Steve Petrick is still working on the Orion Master Starship book. And nothing else has been happening this week. It's been kind of a quiet week. But down on the online store this week, I got the Battle Force damage markers. Yes, they're selling those separately. So if you keep losing them, you now can get replacements. So they're only $1.50 a package. Then obviously you're probably going to want to buy more than one package. This is a reminder. These are a bag of the damage markers that you use for Starfleet Battle Force. The little ones which can easily be lost because they're so tiny. I don't think I've lost some. I've not lost many, but you know, so I saw quite a few of them. Of course, if you're an avid Starfleet Battle Force player, yeah, you've lost a lot of them by now, I'm sure. So they have them available, so you can get replacement parts for a Starfleet Battle Force, which is always an awesome thing to do to keep your Starfleet Battle Force decks available and fresh and shiny. Going on to the SFB Online tournament, that is the Sapphire Star 16 tournament, signups are still open. We're waiting for just four more people. There's only four slots still available. You have 12 signups at this moment in time. And actually, I'm going to do a quick go over here, because all I'm going to do is I'm going to tell you who currently signed up. We have Peter Bakita, we have Ron Brynmeyer, we have Daniel Bistoff, Carl Magnus Carlson. He hasn't played for a while, but it's good to see him back. Of course, me! Jason Gray, we got Jeff Guthridge, Stephen McCann, John Wrigley, Bill Scheller, Seth Szymanski, and of course, Jack Taylor. Jeff has already signed up. I'm waiting for Jeff to sign up, and he actually did. Jeff Clark said he is he wants to play, but he's not signed up yet. So we still have four slots available. Remember, this is the Sapphire Star tournaments. That means as soon as the four slots are filled, the game starts. It's locked down. If you can actually sign up after 16 are filled, but then you're basically looking for a fill-in spot if someone actually drops out. So, onward and forward, when it comes to the online client stuff, I'm working on a feature currently for the online client. I played a little bit of Duskers. Have you ever played Duskers? It's an interesting game. And I'm looking into improving the command line interface for the client. Also, there's some other ideas I've got which I want to do. I'm hoping there's one request which is for copy paste when it comes to the drones. I'm hoping to maybe have an easy way of doing that. Copy paste might be one, or there might be some other solutions which might help in that regard. Moving on to the library report, I still got to upload the updates to the library because there's at least, I think it's four or five. I didn't look at the zip file, to be honest, from Frank. They uploaded some of the latest gen definitions to make them look nicer. I'm always looking for improvements, always. And it comes to the FedCom library. There's still no updates there, and I think according to my note here, I actually did send an email out to Steve Cole a while ago about the gunboats that were just released and whether I actually could release them, have them part of the library. I need to send out an email to him. I'm willing to bet by this moment, it's been like over 6 months, so I'm pretty sure I can add them actually to the library without issue. So with that is the news for this week. It's me, yes, the one and only Paul Franz welcoming you to Starfleet Universe On Call. And tonight we have Gary. Say hi, Gary.
There you go.
And also we have Doug. Say hi, Doug.
Hi, Doug. How are you doing?
There. I don't know why I keep doing that. I set up my iPad so I can monitor what I'm doing, but what do? I keep forgetting to turn off the sound before I start the show. One of these days I'll remember before it and I'll shock myself. But anyhow, before we go on to the main topic for tonight, Gary, is there anything that you want to bring up this to start the show off with? Oh, by the way, I
Well,
did
just two things real quick.
okay, one quick thing just to let you know.
Go
I did let I gave Doug my copy of Module C6, so you can read that. I've got also
on. Okay.
I have the electronic
So,
version, which I
Doug, have
can.
you had a chance to read through it yet?
Doug,
Yeah.
have you had a chance to look at the Module C6?
I have not memorized it yet.
I'm not saying you have to memorize it, just at least read through it.
Read through it.
Okay.
But I do not have it memorized.
Okay, he hasn't read it yet. Okay. So,
Well, I've read it
well, at least in the
memorized.
future, we definitely that'll be something we can definitely discuss, because I did give him my copy, and I do have also electronic version of it, which I've read. So. So what was it that you were going to bring up, Gary? Sorry.
Okay, just two real quick things. One is to follow up on the SteamOS discussion we had last year. Last year, there was actually, I think at the time I mentioned that Valve were basically eventually hoping to expand the use of SteamOS beyond the Steam Deck itself. And this week, actually, there's a company that also makes handheld PCs called Ioneo, and up until now, the Ioneos have had Windows 11 pre-installed, but they just announced this week that they're going to be doing a new model that's going to come with SteamOS as standard.
Oh, cool.
So it's a very small step in that direction, but it's interesting because I think Valve themselves were stating that in the medium term, they want to have a version of SteamOS ready to go for any of their competitors' machines. And in the long term, to have a version of SteamOS that was able to run on any PC environment. So, I mean, people have been able to do it, but apparently it's more kind of complicated. So, but it's more like Valve want to kind of make it so that it's relatively straightforward to, you know, get up and running with whichever platform you happen to have.
Oh, agreed. That's definitely, I think
it would be interesting in terms of.
Yeah, it's definitely advantageous that the Valve to have SteamOS all over the place, especially, I'm assuming, for a manufacturer like this one that we're talking about, that any drivers that are needed to make it so that SteamOS will run properly on their device, they'll work on and make sure that they actually work, and without Valve having to do any work when it comes to that. So, you know.
Well, it doesn't have quite as many interfaces as a Steam Deck. For example, the Steam Deck has the two touchpads, whatever, as well as the thumbsticks.
Mm-hmm.
But this iMeo device doesn't have those. So it should be, in theory, although it does have Hall Effect controllers, if you've ever heard about them. I'm not too clear on them, but apparently they don't use physical parts. They use the magnets or something like that to kind of like tell where the actual stick is. So supposedly they're more reliable because there's less things to break. But in practice, I don't think they've been on the market long enough for people to be sure. So Valve themselves said that they weren't in a hurry to switch to Hall Effect.
And then there's
more the Steam Deck itself, but I guess people want to install them themselves again.
Yeah, the dreaded drift, that whole fun stuff with the Joy-Cons.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Supposedly the Hall Effect ones don't can't get drift, but not what you think.
Understood. What was the second thing?
So the second thing is I've been playing the now it's been out for a few years now, so you can get it on regular PC. You don't have to just get it on Steam Deck, but there's a game from a company called Harebrained Schemes, just called BattleTech, and it's a turn-based. Like, so part of the game is kind of resource management, kind of like XCOM, basically. So you control mercenary lance, and you have to hire new recruits and salvage battle mechs and buy and sell things like weapons and equipment like jump jets and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to go on mercenary contracts, but there's a story mode where you're basically there's no time limit on it, so you don't have to do the story things right away, but it will start scaling up in difficulty. So I guess you need to make sure that you've got better and more well-equipped mechs, or actually more tailored mechs for different missions, because some biomes will be better or worse in terms of things like heat generation. So you have to be careful with what it is that you've actually loaded out your mechs with, depending on the environment that you're fighting in. But then the actual game itself, like the tactical portion, is again very XCOM-like, so it's turn-based, and you have different options for like moving, sprinting. If you install jump jets, you can jump up or down from various pipes, and various weapon systems that exist in the tabletop version of the game, like PPCs and different laser levels and autocannon stuff. The mechs come with those that you'd expect them to have a standard, but you can also in the mech bay, you can uninstall different weapons and put new ones on. You just have to make sure that you watch your weight, because the overall weight of the stuff that you install can't be above what the actual mech itself is capable of. And so then you have to basically, but it's also the pace in terms of the time. So you can pause the passage of time if you need to, like focus on certain things, whatever.
Okay. Okay, you can slow down the game, but if it's turn-based, you don't have to worry about the speed.
I mean in terms of the operation level, like when you're... Like when you're... So what happens is, say for example, you start in orbit of a particular planet, and if you take up a mission that's in a different star system, you have to basically travel from the orbit of the planet up to the jump point, like the zenith or the zero jump point in the system. So on average, that takes about maybe 5 to 7 days. And then when you're at the jump point, you have to dock to the jump ship, but the jump ship is on its own schedule. It's not on your schedule. So if the jump ship is like waiting for other business or whatever,
right,
it might take a couple of days to jump. And then once it jumps, the jump is instantaneous. But if you're going to a system that's within one jump or 30 light years, then you detach from the jump ship and take another 5 to 7 days flying to the orbit of the planet that your new mission is on. But if you're going further than that, like say if you're going to a planet that's 3 or 4 jumps away, you basically have to wait for the jump ship to recharge its KF drive and then jump again, and then wait another few days for it to recharge and jump again. So every month you've got a financial report, because you have to pay the salaries of your mech warriors.
Right.
And you've got like upkeep of your drop ship, and you've got like all these things and so forth that you have to basically, that's why you're getting the mercenary contracts, because you have to be able to keep your business running.
Right, right, so, right. So you can't just jump from point to point to point to point. Kind of like you have to actually have a contract for as being a mercenary unit. Yeah.
And you only have so many missions that are available in a given star system. And the system is based on the Rimworld periphery, kind of like, I don't know if you're familiar with the map of the regular Innosphere near periphery map, but the game is set in like the early 3010s up to 3025 or so.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's no clan technology, and there's it's basically success and wars level tech. And but you're not necessarily in the heart of the Innosphere near Earth or Terra or whatever. You're kind of like out of the beyond. So some of the star systems are multiple jumps away from each other. So you have to basically balance up, all right, well, the resources that I'm losing by jumping to this more distant planet, can I earn that back? Or can I save up enough so that over the month or so it takes to make the transit, will I lose that? Will I go bankrupt or whatever? So,
Right.
And then, of course, when you're in the missions, you have to make sure that you don't get your lands killed, because the game, it only lets you deploy a maximum of 4 units, so like a full lands worth.
Right.
So even if you have 10 or 12 battle mechs, or if you have additional mech warriors like on your payroll, you have to leave most of them at home at any given time. And if any of them get injured, then you have to wait like a week or two for them to heal again. That's another thing that comes up when time passes. So you have to make sure that you're training up or you're getting experience points for your other mech warriors so that they don't get themselves killed if you have to throw them in on the deep end. So,
right.
There's all those sorts of different things that you have to consider. But it's really good, actually. It's like really good. But it's interesting to think about what an FFU game would be like with that kind of budget, because it's not a high budget game by any stretch of the imagination, but it's enough to be able to show off the franchise well.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, it does run really well on Steam Deck, but it's one of those games where you really want to use it with a keyboard and mouse, and you can see the mechs moving around on the screen, on the Steam Deck screen, but you really want to have an external monitor to be able to read the fonts, because the game was written before the Steam Deck existed, so they didn't necessarily give you the option of scaling the font size for a portable monitor, if that makes sense.
Yeah, oh, understood. Yeah, that's obviously the biggest issue with the Steam Deck, and that is there are a lot of games out there, but they were created either not for the Steam Deck or before the Steam Deck even existed. So there wouldn't be any reason to have it so it could expect a smaller screen, you know. So.
But yeah, and actually, just to double back to a topic we covered before, is you might notice, like, for example, if you watch, I think I sent you a link to it before, but if you watch the some of the cinematics, like for example, the opening cinematics for the game, or if you see like some of the story mode cinematics and the music that plays, you can actually get the music soundtrack separately. I think they have it on iTunes.
Oh, yeah. Or on Steam itself, because I know.
BattleTech Lore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I know like a lot of times if you go to the Steam store, that part of the soundtracks are part of one of the things that you can buy.
Basically, what other guy's doing, the one who's on YouTube narrating BattleTech Lore and history, he's actually using songs from the soundtrack to help tell the story, and he's also using images and like little clips from the various videos in the game to basically, you know, illustrate the portion of history that's being presented.
Mm-hmm.
So for example, the opening cinematic, it actually is set in prehistory. I don't want to give too much of it away, but unless you want to show it on the podcast or not, but it basically shows some of the early future history of BattleTech.
Right.
Some of those events, basically, the images and actually the actual music that plays is used basically verbatim, with him talking over it, of course, in the earliest videos that he's done for his lore channel. So it's basically the game, not even just beyond people being able to play it. It's aspects of being able to be used for this other purpose in terms of helping to drum up broader interest in the franchise. And I'm sure that there's more, hopefully there's more than a few people who maybe were introduced to BattleTech through the PC game, and now they're part of the tabletop franchise that Catalyst Game Master are fostering.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not a coincidence that after the game came out, Catalyst changed the logo and word mark that they use for BattleTech to match the one from the game.
Hmm. Well, that makes sense. You want a consistent, you want to have it so that when someone sees a certain logo or image, that they think about a certain game, you know, or business or whatever, you know. I know how that is. Just
Even if you don't get a Steam Deck, I will definitely recommend giving that game a try. It's,
mm-hmm.
You can actually show, because next time like Valve have a sale, you should be able to get the complete edition, because there's some like bonus content that they made available. Nothing too major, just like
mm-hmm.
a few new acts and some new environments. Although I think because the way when you're playing the game, there's like three different main modes. There's like the story mode, and then there's like a regular campaign mode. I haven't tried that one yet. And then there's a skirmish mode where you just basically pick your lance and then the enemy lance and what's that biome you want to fight in,
mm-hmm.
and what time of day, or if there's like rain, that sort of thing.
Right.
And that's basically that's a good way to gain practice, because there's no long term stakes, like in terms of like whether you know you're dying on the other side. You can just train yourself to be better at playing the actual single part of the game.
Hmm? Yeah. Is it just what's the name of the game? Is this called BattleTech or is it called something else? You know.
BattleTech.
Okay, it's called BattleTech. Yeah, because I know I did grab BattleTech on Steam. Jeez. It's been a couple years ago by now. It's when you got me interested in looking at BattleTech again, because I haven't played BattleTech for a while. And actually, I think I played the one you're talking about, but I only played like in a skirmish mode. I played just one game in skirmish mode. I didn't do very good at it. But again, it was like my first game, so you know, I'm sure I need lots more practice.
Another good thing is that if you start playing the campaign mode, it basically has the tutorial kind of factored into it. So it basically teaches you how to play the game as you get started. So
mm-hmm.
That would actually be a good way to get the basics down in terms of moving and different special actions you can do and so forth. So yeah, I would give that a try if you have it installed in your computer already.
Yeah, though if I remember correctly, the BattleTech I played, definitely, a keyboard was kind of necessary at the time. But I don't think, in theory, I think you could have used controllers for it, because it's not like SFB, where you actually have, you kind of are required a keyboard just because of, you have things like the energy allocation form. And in some cases, in some cases that, you, at least with an online client, you currently have, the way you talk to each other, you don't use actual voice. You use, you write it on the screen, or you do your orders. You sometimes need to write them in, on the screen. Cool. That's good to hear. Don't mind me.
To give you a comparison, what you offer through Starfleet Battles Online and FedCom Online, I believe the closest equivalent for, I don't know if it's for Alpha Strike 2 or just for Classic BattleTech, but I believe there's something called Mega Mech, which is basically a way that people play online, but using the tabletop rules.
Right.
But the game from Harebrained Schemes is more like, if you remember the Starfleet Command games for PC, remember how those games kind of like, they weren't fully SFE rules, but they were close-ish. Like they basically, the computer was doing all the work for you. So you were just flying the ship and waiting for your weapons to cycle and so on. So that's basically kind of like that would be a closer equivalent to what the hairbrained screen final thing would be. Well, that actually does raise the question, because I've never tried Mega Mech, so I don't know how well that works on desktop mode and Steam Deck. Like, if it's an entirely browser-based experience, then it should be fine. But I don't know if you have to actually download an executable to actually have it run on your PC or not.
Yeah, I'm looking at Mega Mech right now. Big surprise, it shows downloads for the Mac. I mean, let's go to downloads themselves. Da-da-da-da. They have for both Mac and Linux. And so in theory, it should work, though, obviously, let's look at this, do one quick thing, which is the FAQ. Da-da-da-da, on my Mac. Nope, I don't see, in the FAQ, the Steam Deck is not mentioned. Now, community.
If the Linux version is in flatback form, then it should be okay. But if it's not, then it might be a problem. So
right.
I don't know whether or not they are considering doing a flatback version or not. So.
Oh, okay. Wow. I'm just looking at the installation instructions, and it says basically Mega Mech is based on Java. It uses a JVM, just like SFB Online. And it says Mega Mech should run on any computer that can run Java without much issue. Will not run on, of course, iOS, iPadOS, tvOS, or Android devices. So, sorry. Sorry, my local Zini. So that means, actually, in theory, you can run it not just, you can run it on Linux or Unix. It says Unix/Linux, which means also for those of you, one of those few individuals, the rough and tumble individuals who run, use FreeBSD, you can do it on FreeBSD. But anyway. Yeah, anyway. So, not like since it is Java based, it should run on the Steam Deck. As you said, the easiest way would be getting a Flatpak, because I'm not sure how, when it comes to Steam Deck, how much access do you have to like a Linux desktop environment? Some place where you actually
I mentioned that Steam Deck. Steam OS is So the last pack is needed to be able to install an app or a program into the read-write portion of the drive, like if you're using a solid-state drive or whatever.
Right.
But the actual operating system is set to read-only by default because Valve release updates on a fairly regular basis, and they want to make sure that they're able to kind of control that. So you can, they do say that you can set it to read-write if you want. A, they only recommend it to people who know what they're doing, and B, anything that you install using the bash commands, like when you if you've unlocked that file system,
mm-hmm.
is liable to be erased when the new version of SteamOS comes out, because Valve are basically they just kind of like put the any changes like on top of the old ones. So
yeah, but
basically that's why they
understood.
Strongly recommend people get the flat pack.
Right, but here's the thing. And that is, yeah, there's your, like your main operating system's read only, and that could be easily wiped. There, obviously there's got to be a read write portion or, you know, a volume, which has read write capabilities that can actually store, you know, in between updates, because I have a hard time believing that when you do an update to the system, that it's going to wipe away all the games that you just installed on the system.
The actual system files, like
right? Oh yeah, but
OS operations, so that stuff is locked in.
Right, but the thing is, when it comes to definitely Mega Mech and definitely SFB Online. The client, you don't have to install things onto the actual in the system directories. If you want to, you can install the whole thing in your home directory for that user account, which should be read write, and so you know if you need to, you can do have the JDK, which is actually part. You know, in your home directory and so forth, you can do that without actually installing it in as part of the system. You know, it's not required. I know this for a fact because I do development of Java as my day job. So I know it's possible to do that kind of stuff.
I don't know if you want to. I think Valve do have a community thing where any developers and stuff, you want to. Create separate Steam OS, they should be able to give you some advice. So I guess, like, I'm not saying you should do it, but if you wanted to, maybe it might be worth reaching out to Valve directly just to say, like, run SFB Online, there is this such and such a version, but what do I need to create a flat pack of this? And B, like, is the flat pack required? Like, is there another way to... get the game to, or get their app rather,
mm-hmm.
to run on CMOS without risking messing up the OS portion of the processing.
Understood.
I'm not saying it, but you know what I mean.
Yeah. The thing is, I should be able to look. Actually, I did look it up. I had to reboot my machine, and therefore I lost it all. And that is, I looked up instructions on creating a flat pack. I did not get to read through it all. I know there's, you know, a manifest thing, okay, what's installed and so forth. And one thing that I did not also, I have to look into when it comes to the Steam Deck, as I think I mentioned before, which is whether, I know they have a kind of an app store that's available. And the thing is, how controlled is that app store? You know, because I know currently I have issues getting on like iOS App Store or the Mac App Store. I can't do that just because of they see what looks like Star Trek IP and go, okay, where is your contract with Paramount? And I go, I don't have a contract with Paramount. I have a contract with somebody else who has the ability to has rights to this IP. Oh, can we get a copy of that contract? All this kind of thing. And so it's interesting because, yeah. anyway, yeah, I'm definitely, that's one thing I will be looking into, which is creating a Flatpak installation for the client, which hopefully it's not that difficult and it's something I can automate. So I can do what I already do for, because currently I have three environments at the moment to create the installers. I have my normal Mac installation, which actually can create the Linux installation, because you don't need Linux to create that installation. But I need a Mac to create the Mac installation. Then I need a Windows VM to create the Windows installation for the SAP line. This is why it takes me multiple hours to create a release of the online client. You know, so that's why it takes a bit of time to do that. So anytime, that's why updating is something I like to do rarely, because just how much time it takes to do the whole update. Because unfortunately, short of spending a lot of money, and I think it's somewhere between $400 and $1,000 a year for an installer. It's like, no, geez. It's, you know, I barely make a dime out of this as it stands. You know, it's mostly just because I like supporting SFB and FedCom and so forth. And it's not as much about making the money from. Yeah. Anyhow. So yeah. I'll probably play some more BattleTech at some point. One thing actually was I got playing last week was actually a game of Duskers, which is kind of cool. I like it because it has a command line interface, which you can control robots. They call them drones, is what they are, drones that go through a ship, and it will, you know, you salvage different pieces of ship. You might find something from just scrap to either disabled or destroyed drone, so you can actually pick up additional modules from. I've never gotten very far with Duskers itself. Duskers, I've usually only gone through three or four ships, because the thing is, it's only part. What I've done so far is only part of the game. Part of the game also is trying to figure out what is happening with these ships, because you have these aliens/robots or whatever that have been, you know, attacking these ships, and that's those are ships that you keep going from point A to point B to find and salvage and investigate the ships. And of course, the fun part is that every single time I go to a new ship, it seems like all the logs from the ships have been wiped, you know, have been corrupted to the point where there are no logs that you actually can read. So that's part of the game. Okay. Bye, Kate. I saw him over my left shoulder. He was jumping down from my keyboard. I mean, my printer. So yeah. Yeah. I'm sure he'll be back, folks. So if you want to see the local Zinni, don't worry. I'm sure you will see him again. Moving onward and forward. So Doug, we were talking at this point, it was last week or this weekend. I think it was this weekend. I've lost track of time, really.
I guess it was on the phone or on the show, but I think I know what you're talking about.
It was on the phone.
Okay.
Cause we were, we were talking about the captain's game.
Yes. And we talked about a captain's game campaign that, oh good lord, I was a participant in back in the 80s. After I came home from my first army tour, mm-hmm. there was like a small group of players that I taught how to play. I taught like two or three of them how to play, and like there's like maybe one or two others that had learned the game before I met them.
Mm-hmm.
We played the captain's campaign, captain's uh-huh. game mm-hmm. out of the basic game, and. And, you know, this is like roughly 87, 88, 89 time frame. And the only mistake that we made as a group was that some of our players liked using the S rule about ship modification. And we used that rule. You were allowed to, and it's way back, you were allowed to, I forget if it was add up to four boxes or change four boxes, doesn't matter which, but you could modify your ship slightly as part of, along with the BTV of the regular options you could buy for, you know, T-bombs, ex-marines, legendary officers and whatnot. And I took a Galactic Survey Cruiser of the Fed type, and the four boxes that I added to it was four phaser G's. So with only a couple photons and, you know, knowing the scout rules, but all those phasers and the phaser G's, when we got into a dual kind of scenario, or, you know, pretty much any combat, but mainly in a dual one, I would blind out my opponent completely and get into a position where I could just hit them with overwhelming force. And even though it would take out my channels, it would literally just devastate, cripple, or destroy whatever I was up against. But the thing is, it was still a fun campaign because everybody played through the whole thing. And, you know, there's scoring based off the old system, and I don't have the rule book anymore because you got, like, lost on that first move a few years ago. And I think it would be a really good fit for a weekend of gamers, personally. I mean, it's as long as you have several people willing to play it out so that each person can go through, you know, either the whole number of encounters or say a modified set for the weekend, then, you know, it probably would be an easier thing to do than a tournament where you really need a bunch of people to show up. If that makes sense. And it's a BTV thing. You can set a year and say, okay, pick your ship, and that's what you're stuck with for all the scenarios. So, but it doesn't have to be like height of the general war, everything's available. It could be a challenge thing where you do, you know, original edition with like not quite early years, but early enough that, you know, you might be running like a Fed CA without resets instead of like the command cruiser with everything. And make it a little bit more challenging and fun for everybody.
Mm-hmm. Understood. Yeah, and actually the good thing about the captain's game, oops, I just dropped it, is that in theory, you can go. You, I'm sorry, I'm having a little problem with the locals eating. Okay. Really? Are you done? I'm not sure if he's done. But anyway, the one good thing about yes, you're being very cute. And everyone loves you. Everyone's hating me. Okay.
Oh no, we don't hate you, Paul. Okay. Oh, what a cute city. He's ripping my arteries out.
Say hi. Hi everybody. Yeah, he's not getting comfortable, so I have to let him go. But anyway, the good thing about actually when it comes to the captain's game is that in theory, come back. We can actually use the tournament ships
you could use anything.
Right. But you know,
the only downside to that though is I think it loses like a bit of the flavor, shall we say.
Right, but let me bring this up, because I actually sat and I spent money to get the basic rule set from Warehouse 23. Da, 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 da. And come on, there's the mini campaign. The captain's game, here it is. Okay, first, you know, the number one is going to be combat against a single enemy ship. So, obviously, it could be using the standard SDB rules, but we can use, like, the tournament ships because they're basically their cruisers. So it would be against... Then, okay, scenario number two is the planet crusher, which is, if I call it correctly, it's... You know, one ship against a planet crusher, correct? Because it's captain's game. Next one, again, another one against combat against a single enemy ship, which can, again, we can use the tournament sheets, you know, the ships, because they're cruisers. We don't have to use the tournament rules. We can just use the tournament ships. And of course, then the Space Amoeba. Space on the base defense, obviously, that's a little more complicated. That requires a few more ships. Okay, come on. Don't mind me. I'm looking up. I know the base defense. Let me look at this. Historical events, and then, no. Okay, also, there's one which is going to be a duel with a pirate raider, you know, which, actually, this one says a CR versus your ship. And it doesn't say...
Well, here's the thing, Paul.
Yes.
If I wanted to play, like, tournament ships, I would just ask to play a tournament. Yeah, it's one of the big things about the captain's game that was different than playing the tournament ships back then is that they weren't always like the perfected ship with everything and a big balanced, BTV thing. You had flaws that you had to work around.
Mm-hmm.
So. I mean, you can do whatever you want as far as the event that you want to run, but I would really suggest just saying, hey, you know, here's the choices, and just lay out a choice for each race, each type, and, you know, keep it fairly simple. You got your BTV set up. You can choose your options, and but if you have it, you know, limited to year X, and He says, if you want to run, to basically, if you want to run the Enterprise, the command cruiser type of ship, you're going to be taking a penalty versus a guy who wants to run a D6 or a D7 that's not a command cruiser.
Understood. Well, the first thing is, Doug,
if going into the tournament ship things, I think that really would detract from the overall experience.
Understood. The problem is, I don't have the SSDs at the moment. For all the collection of SFB ships, I don't have the SSDs anymore.
Yeah, well, it's 6 weeks away, and if we can get them on an electronic thing, you can just print them out. Somebody says, I want to run, you know, a Heisen Ranger. Okay. Press a button and print the thing out for them. So. That's okay. Just my random thought on that.
Understood. I can see what I can do. I'll think about what would be the.
And you can always ask for support from ADD on that, because it does kind of, it would be a promotional thing for the game.
Mm-hmm. Understood. Yeah, the base defense is use the following table, which is CA for a defender, attacking player is one CA or and one CL or one CC and one DD. So definitely for the base scenario, it actually require multiple ships.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And that's the flip side of it. It's not all bloody fight to the end, except maybe that one. Because if I remember correctly, and you've got it in front of you, I don't have the thing. The big deal with it is that a lot of the scoring would be done by the base rule scoring, which means you go in to a duel, you don't have to fight it out to the bloody end like you do in a tournament. You know, or to like somebody conceding and saying, you win, because I'm going to explode. No, you can go in, make a battle pass, and run away and figure out the BTD after the win by BTD and by, you know, the standard victory condition.
Mm-hmm.
You go in and you cripple your opponent and he runs away, you're probably still going to win. You just won't get as much as if he blew his ass up. And that does make a difference in that game. So. It really differentiates.
Sorry, guys.
Was that Gary?
Yeah, so my line was dropping out a couple of times, so I missed what was going on, but I recall maybe about a year or two ago, I don't know if it was on the BBS or here on the call or both, but I was suggesting basically kind of like a mid-year's equivalent of the tournament, a tournament. So not necessarily using the tournament cruisers, but it wouldn't be a single elimination either. It would be more like a round robin, where you basically chose the various mid-years or unrefitted cruisers. I guess you could do Omega too, because bear in mind that the Omega and LMC ships, most Omega ships are basically middle year ships, and the LMC has middle year versions of many of their ships as well. And but in the Alpha Octant, especially now with Module C6 and Module R4J, there are more. There is a broader range of middle year ships, like for the Romulans and Paravians, Carnivals, and so forth, that are available. And so, what you would do is. You would basically choose the ship and then you would add your commander's option points or whatever. But if you're short, like say if you set like a standard point value, like say 150 points or something, and if you're under that, then you get the balance back as BPV credit, victory point credit basically. And then you would play the encounter using standard victory points. And then at the end, your victory points would be basically added onto like a league table. So you'd play everyone else in the tournament once, and then the person who has the highest number of victory points over the duration of the round robin would be the winner. So that'd be a way of making sure that everyone who buys in to the tournament gets the equal number of games, that you're not just paying a full amount and you lose one match and you're over. And it also makes things a bit more kind of dynamic, because people have to kind of try and, you know, make do with less powerful ships. But also, it means that you don't have to invent middle years tournament ships, because you're using the historical ships. Like, you're not trying to go out of your way to create an artificial balance and stuff. You're actually just using the ship as it exists in historical circuit battles. So that sounds like what Doug is getting at in terms of part of what he's getting at, anyway, from what I could hear, because again, like my line was dropping out, so I was only hearing part of it. But is that kind of close to what he was getting in mind, or is there something else?
Mm-hmm. To a certain degree, yes. Doug was thinking about using in the original idea was using it in the context of the captain's game, where the captain's games you have the nine different scenarios, which you can use, you know, ships, and you know, if we use it as a device for playing in a tournament, then yeah, we could probably do as you said, is use victory points and have it so that people will then try to get the most victory points, and the person with the most victory points wins the tournament. And I think that's actually it's a neat idea to do instead of the normal win lose kind of thing. You know, you have a way of playing it so, you know, and even crap.
Now the only one thing I think you really need to have a modification on in this would be like allowing each player to get an additional small victory point bit by when they play off of their guy because of the dual scenario. Yeah. So my question is, are you going to end up in a dual scenario where are those scenarios going to be like player A ship versus player B's captain ship, or player A ship versus another ship that's classed in that range, but it's not necessarily the other player's captain ship? That's the only thing I would say that kind of would need to be kind of worked out a bit. That makes sense.
Yeah, so basically you're saying is instead of using the slip selections that are currently as part of the captain's game, because if you... give me a sec. If you look at the captain's game, it has ship selections for the different scenarios. In the case of you have players, the player versus the enemy, the first scenario would be against a Klingon. In the case of the Fed, when it comes to scenario C, the third scenario, which is the other duel, that because any BC and so forth. And instead, you're talking about having it so that you have a player ship, which is the captain ship. You can choose that has a certain BPV that you can use.
Let me put it in another perspective. Player A is running Fed, player B is running Klingon. Player A's turn versus in the duel, instead of having it so that it's player A versus player B's captainship, it's player A versus player B who's running a generic ship that's not his captainship for that scenario. But player B in that scenario is still going to be incentivized. He's going to get some kind of points for the overall campaign, because when player B is playing his captainship player A will have to pitch in and play against him.
Okay, so
hold on.
So in effect, when you're, I mean, because when you have the two ship scenario where you've got like the base defense scenario where you have multiple ships,
right?
You need to be able to have somebody play the other side. And
I've actually got an idea about, because like say for example, if you set up a round robin thing and you assume that there's one thing to bear in mind is that the captain's games, the opponents tend to be set based on like historical rivalries. So for example, in module C6, if you're flying Paravian, the Paravian version of the captain's game, I think the first two ships you fight, one of them is Gorn and the other one's ISC. And if you're Carnivon, I guess the first ones you fight would be Kzinti and Liren and then maybe Klingon too. But what you could do here is, if you do the round robin portion of the tournament, basically it's just everyone plays against everyone else once. But then what you could do is you could have a playoff system, and you could say that the winner of the regular season, the round robin rather, gets an automatic bye. But then maybe the next batch of players, like maybe like one or two others, join them. But you could have like a wild card system, and the wild cards have to play a base scenario or some other multiplayer scenario. Maybe a juggernaut scenario. That'd be interesting too, because like the original juggernaut scenario had a juggernaut against four Alpha Octon ships. So you could basically have the person who won the regular season plays as the juggernaut or plays as the base or whatever. And then the four running up to the four lowest team, four wildcard placed players basically play their ship. But then you have to tally the victory point total during the scenario. And then whichever of those four or two or three or whatever players gets the highest victory points, they go into the knockout round. And then, so that's a way that you can not have it just be a plain getting into the playoff season portion of the season based on your regular season result, but you're adding a little extra unpredictability into it. So I don't know if that sounds like it might be an idea or not, but because that could be a way to basically give players both a knockout round option and a regular season option, and then add a little extra twist to it to get from one to the other.
You could also shorten the whole thing too, because we're talking about a weekend of play, and say, okay, we're going to knock out one of the duels, and you play your ship in a scenario, but you're required to play the second ship in that duel scenario against somebody else.
Yeah, because in theory, here's the thing is, since looks like at least when it comes to ship selection for the original game, the original captain's game, I know it's limited, but let's just go with that at the moment. The scenarios number 1 and 3, for the most part, you know, assuming that people choose, you know, other empires, don't all choose the same empire. We definitely match those people up to get through scenario number 1 and scenario number 3. If they, you know, basically they're just playing quote unquote their captainship. Compared to something like base defense. Base defense is more of you have the attacker and you have the defender, and the points are scored per SC35. Okay, because the Monza scenarios, are those single player scenarios? Yeah. Okay, yeah. So in other words, those can be played out, you know, individually by people, with you know, with a judge watching over them. So we have what, 1, 2, 3 monster scenarios, 3, 4 monster scenarios. It's only the surprise reversed, the duel with a pirate, base defense, and the two combats against enemy ships that would require interaction with another player. Would require another player. Whether that be me or it would be another player. Depends upon, you know, how many people show up to play this. In theory, we want to, as just a start, you know, have people start, instead of starting with, you know, playing against another opponent, assuming that let's say there's not another opponent available. We can say, okay, well, why don't you do this? So let's start you off with like the monster, one of the monster ones, like Planet Crusher, because it's a solo scenario. You can play it by yourself. We can see how that goes, and then when an opponent shows up, we'll then play that. And if another opponent doesn't show up, then maybe I could play against that person. You know,
that doesn't have to be in order. But you know what? It could also help a lot to get some people committed ahead of time, too. Because then you have players that show up for the start, and they can be paired off.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that's hard to do. It's extremely hard to do. But, you know, I was thinking we could do a little blitz and hit all the threads, all the forums, all the SFE groups that are out there, say, hey, this event is happening here, and these are the half dozen different things that are scheduled for SFE, and the more people that commit to it ahead of time, the more fun will be had by all. So there's a thought.
Agreed. But yeah, at least, at the very least, it allows us to start.
You know what?
Yes.
You know what? You could do that would make it even more interesting.
What?
And this is my opinion, because we're talking about, you know, it's a 3-day event, which is a Monday federal holiday. But not everybody will take that holiday off, because it's not like the 4th of July or Thanksgiving. It's President's Day, for crying out loud.
Right.
To do the frigate version of the game, which is, I believe, much more truncated and a lot faster. And, you know, to say this is a convention event, so we've modified it this way, where we, you know, cut out one of the duels, maybe cut out one of the monster scenarios.
Right. Well, the idea would be to play as many scenarios as possible.
Well, the thing is, and bear this in mind, is that each player will have a double duty in the game.
Right.
Because the opponents in all the non-monster scenarios are people.
Right.
So, and you know, you incentivize people to play that by making it a requirement to, you know, get your placing within the thing to get points. And also, you know, you give them points based on their performance outside of their own primary ship.
Mm-hmm.
And even so, you could just say those are tiebreakers, or
right. Well,
reduce them out for something. Yeah.
Right. definitely. For you know, for those that you don't play your own captainship, I think yeah, you could definitely. I think it'd be a good idea to have them so they can earn points outside of it. You know, for example, Survivor's Reversed. You know, the person who is the attacker. Actually, I'm not sure it necessarily needs to be the attacker. I need to look. But okay, the attacker only gets his own ships. In the surprise reverse scenario, each player should play against a player that is not participating in the campaign or against one of the players. Blah blah blah. That's not using who's not using his campaign ship.
You would have to modify that because look, you know, 2-day event, not a multi-weekend thing with a regular group of people attending.
Right, right. Yeah, that's why I think the in theory, if drop the base scenario and surprise refers just because the number of ships involved. Because the number of ships involved just increases the number of.
I'm thinking more in terms of time.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
It's less about complexity and more about time, because if somebody shows up at 10 o'clock in the morning on Saturday, they'll need to get X number of scenarios in over those 2 days. So, versus, you know, somebody that shows up on Sunday. You know, we could set it up so that theoretically you could finish the thing out in 1 day of play.
Right.
But on the other side of that, you know, if somebody comes out on Sunday morning and wants to play it, it would be nice to be able to have them have a shot at winning the thing still.
Mm-hmm. Understood. Yeah.
Well, there is also the option of running a frigate captain's tournament. Because if people are limited in time, then using frigates is going to be a much quicker experience than using cruisers.
Oh, that's exactly.
And also, the number of points that you get would be fewer, but it'd be less disruptive, I guess. Like, what you could do is that you could basically have a Division 1 and Division 2, where, like, Division 1 uses the cruisers, and then Division 2 uses the frigates. So say if you've got less experienced players that want to be in a less... making it an easier to play and less hostile environments, you could introduce them into the frigate division. And then if any of them feel like they want to be promoted to the cruiser division, they can. But then on the flip side, you could have someone who doesn't do well in the cruiser division might be at risk of being relegated to the frigate division. So you'd have, season by season, you would have that... you would never have the same batch of players in each one, so that could be a way of keeping even the cruiser players on their toes, because if they don't do well enough, then they might find themselves down in Division 2. So
I think that's overcomplicating it.
Yeah,
for a 2-day event.
Yeah,
at a convention with. It's not a bad idea. It's, you know, that might be a good one for, like, you know, a campaign over a week at, like, the game shop or somebody's house where you have a regular group getting together.
Right. Agreed.
But in the short time frame of what we're doing at the convention, I think simple and short will give a better player experience and, you know, that basically.
Mm-hmm. Right. Understood. And, you know, that's why, you know, obviously, you know, for the players can play a monster scenario, but we won that one. Play like two monster scenarios in a row. Play one monster scenario. Okay, now you play against the actual opponent, because that's one of the reasons why you would want to be there and play, is actually play against somebody else, and not just play a solo scenario, you know, at a convention where it's something you can do at home.
Uh-huh.
You know, so.
Well, one of the things is if you have, like, if you're doing this as a group, you're probably not soloing the thing. You're playing that scenario. Your opponent in the next round is playing the same scenario or two ships. It's just like next to each other, and it's pretty quick and over with. But it's part of the overall experience. And that's one of the things with the captain's game is that it is meant to give kind of an overall experience of SFD as a whole. I mean, you have a small fleet fight with the which one, the surprise reverse, and or what is the surprise? I don't have it in front of me. Is that one where you're just caught with your pants down, or is it multiple ships coming after you?
That's where the surprise reverse is basically it's a multi-ship.
You're going after a bunch of ships.
It's a multiple ship scenario. The idea is that you're a single cruiser against this fleet.
I remember it.
Yeah,
you're going in against a bunch of weapon status zero guys to do as much damage as you can.
Right.
Yeah. So you have a fleet fight with that, and you have another small fleet fight with the base defense one. But there's different flavors of fleet fight. And you have, you know, the dual scenarios against ships from the other races. And you've got the monster scenario, which are all included in the game. So I think the monster scenarios should be kept in. You might cut one of the fleet ones out, but make it, you know, equal across the board for which ones get cut out.
Right.
And you just like tear it down. It doesn't have to be three duels. It could be one. It could be two.
Right. If I say we want to kill one of the scenarios, I say base defense. Get rid of that. Because I think the surprise reverse is an interesting scenario, and it should go relatively quick. Versus the base defense, which is you have, you know, a relatively small, but everyone knows what a base, attacking a base is like. It's a slow. Usually, it's a very slow going scenario, because you're going against a static target. Yes, he's got some mobile defenses. But at the same time, you know, it might also be a very long game. I think surprise burst would actually end up being a much faster game than the base defense. So, and of course, you got three duels here too. So, and the duels shouldn't take long. You know, possibly 2 to 3 hours, because it's SFB. But at least, you know, it's not going to be you spend all day on one scenario. You know, that's the whole idea, is make sure, you know, that you can get things done within like a 2 to 3 hour window per game. Obviously, the monster scenario should go through real quick.
Well, I was just thinking that maybe you could split the difference by having the duels be with cruisers, but then have the multi-ship scenarios be the frigate captain's burdens.
Well, that was the whole point of going to the frigate game, the frigate captain's game, is that if you have the cruisers thing, those could be much longer fights.
Right.
Whereas doing it all as the frigate, they could all be pretty quick.
Mm-hmm. Well, actually, you had to bring that up. You had to bring that up. Give me one quick sec, because it's getting late. Da-da-da-da-da, boom. Which is, okay, there it is. And I just want to see what are the changes. Right. Okay, they do have... Right, okay. One of the things that they do have also is the it's called the frigate captain's game. So instead of playing cruisers, you're playing frigates. That's what you're playing.
That's what I was saying.
Right.
That is exactly what I meant when I said switch it over to frigates. I didn't mean just substitute frigates for cruisers. I meant play that out and maybe modify that one.
Mm-hmm.
So that it's playable in a weekend. And I'd say playable in the day. So if it was playable within a day, we could do it Saturday and do a whole different one on Sunday. And if somebody shows up partway through on Saturday, and we can partner them up with somebody else who's starting late, then they can finish it on Sunday. That makes. Does that sound decent?
Mm-hmm. Okay, interesting. Okay. Sorry, I'm looking at, I bought the SWB module S1, and they have like Operation Unity Battle Force record form, and they have campaign forms too for, I'm not sure what they're used for. And I have to look at it more to understand what those are designed for. Escape the energy monster. Interesting. Oh, well, okay. Well, with that, actually, we need to wrap up, given it's another late night, and I need to shut this all down and get up in 6 hours.
Okay.
So.
Can I plug real quick?
Sure.
Gamer's the winner. Uh-huh. 6 weeks out, President's Day weekend, Saturday, Sunday, Monday. We're still figuring out what the SF Universe stuff is going to be there, but if you are listening to this and you like to play Starfleet Battles or Wars and an Empire, this is a good place for you to come to do either of those. You know, talk to friends. See who's going to show up. Who's willing to come out. You know, just assume that I'm going to go, so there's going to be 10 other people. You know, talk to people. I got complained at about Twilight Imperium because somebody couldn't get their version played, but he doesn't talk to all the other people that he meets at other conventions. And I'm like, tell people about it. You know, well, that's too much work. So, yeah, just ask around. If you're on a thread or if you're in an SFC group, say something in the group. Say, anybody want to go to this event? Well, I'm coming out. You know, we can sit down and play Captain's Game. We could do a wedding cake attack, you know, base defense of our own. We could do our own scenarios, or we could show up with 10 friends and have a tournament impromptu or something. Yeah, yep. There you go. That's my plug.
Okay. And I'll bring my Federation Commander stuff. I got, you know, got my whole card collection back here. So,
and a schedule.
So we can play a large scenario then. I may actually get it done within a day. So
there you go.
So Gary, it's always a pleasure having you around. You take care. Doug, always glad to have you around, and hopefully I'll stop by your house at some point again.
Yeah, it would be nice. I will probably be here. Yay!
Yay! Yeah, let's make sure. Yeah, make sure you don't get in the hospital again.
Yeah, you can visit me there too.
Okay, you have a good night.
Thank you.
So, I had a little discussion there about having the captain's game. That actually might be the frigate captain's game, which might be definitely get things done quicker because of the smaller ships. And according to the it's U8.0, which is the frigate captain's game, they have adjustments that you can do. I don't think there was any adjustments for like the base scenario. I have to double check the base defense, but they had adjustments for other things, like including definitely the monster scenarios and things like that. So it'd be interesting, and then maybe we can do something. I think that'd be an interesting way of running a tournament. Have it so that you play through these campaign games, and as you play through the campaign games, then you earn the points, and then the person with the most points wins. So I think that's a neat idea. So with that, I am Paul Franz, and I bid you a good night.